Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's been 30 years since Sullivan County last drew up a waste management plan. And there's a lot more waste now. Solid waste, recyclables, electronics, household hazardous waste, the list goes on. A part of that draft plan is a waste-to-energy facility, and it's alarming environmentalists. They say it's a fancy name for an incinerator. Today, we speak to Rebecca Kreskoff of Beyond Plastic Sullivan County and Barbara Arundel of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability about the options suggested in the plan about how to deal with the county's increasing volume of trash and what you can do about it. 28 days until the election. Today, we continue our election coverage to keep you connected. We'll hear from State Senator Peter Oberrocker, the incumbent for Senate District 51. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The National Hurricane Center says Hurricane Milton continues to amass strength at an astonishing pace in the Gulf of Mexico. 3 hours ago, it was a Category 1 storm. It's now a major Category 4 hurricane with top sustained winds of 150 miles per hour. It could grow even stronger, and it's aiming for Florida's Gulf Coast. Danny Pannell's house and several of his rental properties in the Tampa area are all under threat. He says they just got through Hurricane Helene.
We don't know what this storm is going to do. That might be a 1-2 punch to take out this property.
Storm surge watches are up for much of Florida's Gulf Coast. Seawater could flood as high as 12 feet in some coastal areas. Meanwhile, the death toll from Hurricane Helene has risen to at least 227 people in several states. Conditions remain dire in many parts of the southeast, especially North Carolina. President Biden is sending additional active-duty troops to that state. NPR's Luke Garrett reports they will help with storm recovery work.
President Biden is ordering 500 soldiers to move into western North Carolina after Governor Roy Cooper requested the additional support. In a statement, the White House says the troops will bring, quote, advanced technology to assist with response and recovery efforts. The move comes just days after Biden sent 1,000 active-duty troops to the Tar Heel State. Those troops are helping the National Guard deliver food, water, and medicine to communities isolated because of Hurricane Helene. The president also said he has been briefed on Milton, a potentially catastrophic storm that could hit the same areas just ravaged by Helene, and that he stands ready to assist local and state leaders, quote, regardless of political party. Luke Garrett, NPR News, Washington.
Today marks 1 year since the war in Gaza began. Israel says Hamas militants killed about 1,200 people and took about 250 others hostage that day. Gaza health officials say since then, Israeli strikes have killed more than 41,000 Palestinians. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reports Israel is urging Palestinians in northern Gaza to evacuate.
The Israeli military said it was, quote, operating with intensity in the area. In Deir al-Balah, central Gaza, NPR producer Anas Baba met 58-year-old Abu Nidal Muslah, a father of seven sitting in a makeshift tent wearing mismatched shoes. Muslah is from the same area in the north where Palestinians today were warned to leave. He's been displaced four times in the last year. Muslah was a teacher on his way to school around the same time Hamas-led militants attacked Israel a year ago. He says he feels empathy for the Israeli hostages held by Hamas, and he blames Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for the suffering both sides have endured. Rise up against Netanyahu, he said. Rise up so we can have normal relations. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
You're listening to NPR. The Supreme Court has started its new term. The justices are going to let stand a decision that bars emergency abortions in Texas in violation of state law. Texas has a very strict abortion ban. The Texas law said hospitals cannot be forced to provide emergency abortions. The decision keeps a lower court order in place. The high court did not detail the reason for its decision. As the Supreme Court term begins, Utah is hoping the conservative justices will take a case that could transfer millions of acres of federal land to state or private control. NPR's Kirk Siegler reports the lawsuit could have dramatic consequences for the West.
This is Utah's latest attempt to wrest control of federal public lands, and it's more limited. The state is trying to take over 18 million acres of Bureau of Land Management land because Republicans say the Biden administration is locking it up for any type of drilling or development. Federal ownership of Western land is considered settled case law, but former BLM Director Pat Shea says the current Supreme Court appears willing to overturn long-established legal precedents.
You know, at some point, you become lost for words.
It's not yet clear whether the Supreme Court will even consider Utah's case. Kirk Sigler, NPR News.
Americans Victor Ambrose and Gary Ruvkun have won this year's Nobel Prize in Medicine or Physiology. The Nobel Committee says the pair are being honored for work in discovering microRNA. They discovered this is necessary for translating genes into proteins. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This morning, we're talking trash. No, we're not jumping into the fray of the politically charged atmosphere. We're talking about garbage, your garbage, in Sullivan County. Currently, Sullivan County trucks its waste to Seneca Meadows landfills in northern New York. It costs the county about $10 million a year, according to county officials. Seneca Meadows is seeking a permit from the state to expand as it runs short on space, but there's no guarantee the state will grant it, leading counties that truck trash there to consider alternative measures. Sullivan County has drafted a local solid waste management plan. It's more than 450 pages and includes many suggestions for making garbage disposal more environmentally friendly, including expanding a countywide composting program. It also suggests three feasibility studies on new ways to dispose of the county's garbage, an efficiency review of the current methods, privatization, and the construction of a waste-to-energy facility in Sullivan County. Environmental advocates are sounding the alarm about that third option, saying the term waste-to-energy facility is greenwashing for what the facility really is, an incinerator. Joining us this morning to talk more about the plan is Rebecca Kreshkoff, the retired communications professional and co-founder of Beyond Plastics Sullivan County, and Barbara Arundel, the chair and chief science officer for Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. We should note Radio Catskill recently honored Damascus Citizens at our Community Awards for their environmental stewardship efforts, and Damascus Citizens is a business supporter. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hey, hi.
Thanks.
Hello,
for,
everybody.
Thank you for being here. Rebecca, I just want to start with you. I kind of ran through that.
You did a great job.
Well, tried to do a synopsis there, thanks to some of other reporting that's been out as well. But talk about this local solid waste management plan. 450 pages. It's a draft. It is trying to address many issues, but the one that's kind of sticking out for folks, including you and Barbara and Damascus Citizens, is this, quote, waste-to-energy facility. Talk a little bit more about that.
Right. Well, as you said, waste-to-energy is a misleading greenwashing term to promote incinerators and make people think they're doing something environmentally good when they actually aren't. So it's just, it turns waste into toxic ash and hazardous air emissions. Only a fraction of the energy in the waste is recovered. And waste incineration companies actually make more money getting paid to take waste than they do selling energy. It is the most expensive way to deal with waste. And it's the most inefficient way to generate energy.
And the other thing also is that all the contracts that I've seen, I mean, this one might turn out to be different, but all the ones that I've seen between the facilities and municipalities have what's called a put or pay clause. Yep. In it, meaning that if the facility isn't given enough trash to sorry about the beeping, to make their bottom line positive, they can charge the municipality, the county, for the difference.
That's
so in
right.
Other words, it's going to cost the county, or they can import trash from other places. neither of which sound like a good idea.
Well, it's not just that they can import trash, but they actually have to.
This is what drove Detroit
into bankruptcy. They wound up importing garbage from their wealthy suburbs. So the city dwellers were actually subsidizing their wealthy neighbors in the suburbs to send trash to the Detroit incinerator.
Right.
Harrisburg also was hamstrung by staggering debt payments to upgrade its incinerator and declared bankruptcy as well. The thing is, these incinerators are incredibly expensive to build, hundreds of millions of dollars, even up to $1 billion. And who winds up footing the bill? They can't be done without government subsidies. And so it always comes down to taxpayers who are paying for it.
Right, and mostly also the local municipality itself. That's why there was the financial problems in those areas.
Yep.
And there are alternatives, which I hope we will spend a little time on later.
We certainly will, but there's two other key things that are... We've talked about the money, and we've talked about greenwashing. It's not really waste energy, it's just burning trash.
Well, if I interrupt here, the plan takes into consideration some state guidelines in terms of meeting energy goals, which were released last year, and that includes to, quote, recover in an environmentally acceptable manner energy from solid waste that cannot be economically and technically reused or recycled, end quote, which is what they're saying is their reasoning for suggesting the waste-to-energy facility or incinerator. What do you think about that?
I think it's a reflection of the fact that government agencies don't always do the best thing, make the best choices. They have, in their hierarchy, incineration, or rather waste-to-energy, in quotes, is number three, and they have landfill after that. But what I would say is landfilling is not as bad as incineration, because incinerators release toxic emissions, familiar ones like lead, mercury, dioxins, particulate matter, and PFAS, the forever chemicals. And there is no safe level of any of these substances. They are persistent, they get airborne, and they travel everywhere, but especially nearby. So if I may, I would just want to tell you a couple of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last November, millions of people in France, in the Paris region, were told, don't eat eggs from backyard hens anymore, because eggs, chickens, you know, hens' eggs, really concentrate dioxins, which is among the most carcinogenic family of chemicals known. They accelerate all types of cancers. It's not just one kind of cancer. So,
what was it about the eggs? Was this from a place where there was an incinerator?
The largest incinerator in Europe is located in Paris.
Okay.
So it is shedding its dioxins everywhere. And this is true of new incinerators as well as old ones. There have been scientific studies done measuring the level of dioxins in hens' eggs, you know, backyard chickens, mm-hmm. Because, you know, they scrabble around the soil. They eat what's ever in the soil and gets into the microorganisms that are in the soil. It turns out eggs are very good bioindicators of dioxins in the environment. So,
see, there's a misnomer that, in other words, a mistaken belief that if you burn trash, all these chemicals will get, quote-unquote, burned up. But it's not true, because a lot of these chemicals are pretty durable, and they just kind of go through the incineration process and come out the other end and are flying around. So that's the problem with this incinerator and the eggs in France. But what needs to happen is to think past the immediate future and think about beyond, you know, 6 months from now. So I think that what we're trying to talk about is to have a longer view, which promotes health. And what do you have if you don't have your health?
Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Rebecca Kreshkoff, from co-founder of Beyond Plastic, Sullivan County, and Barbara Arendelle, chief Chair and Chief Science Officer of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. We're talking about a draft management plan, a waste management plan in Sullivan County, which is making suggestions for how to deal with the increasing amount of garbage in the county. They're opposed to one of those ideas, which is a waste-to-energy facility or incinerator. As I said, it's one of a few options. Focusing right now on this incinerator option, are there other options within this draft plan that you've seen that are more acceptable or help lead folks into a better way to deal with waste in the county?
They do talk about expanding recycling and their composting program, which started about a year or two ago. Both great. These will really greatly reduce the waste stream. We also need to invest in infrastructure to really amp it up, do reclamation, invest in reuse and refill facilities, that whole way of thinking. And all this will greatly reduce the amount of waste that we have to get rid of at the end.
Yeah. Barbara, anything about the plan that you've seen that is more positive than this waste-to-energy incinerator option?
Well, okay, let's look at recycling for a second. In Sullivan County, it used to be, quote-unquote, used to be, where people could put, could sort their own recycling of a bunch of different quantities, different colors of glass, office paper, cardboard, etc., and into different bins, and then they were sold. They were bundled and sold, cans, etc. Now, it all goes into one bucket, which is often contaminated by getting wet and breaking glass, etc., then has to go someplace where the county actually pays for it to be sorted instead of the people sorting them. Now, I and a colleague from our coalition went and talked to the recycling coordinator for Wayne County at the Wayne County PA, which is just across the river from Sullivan County, recycling center. He was wonderful, gave us lots and lots of information. One key point is that basically they pretty much don't cost the county anything. Yes, they get grants. Yes, they get help from the county, from the federal government, et cetera. But the total taken off of the waste stream is 25 to 30% of the waste stream. And that is a big deal. And it also means that there's a positive outcome that all of these materials are reused and don't go to a landfill. They get bundled and they get sold. Now, some years they wind up paying a little. Some years they make a profit. It depends on what the price is for the various things. You know, what's the price for recycled paper? What's the price for the cans, et cetera, et cetera? But it all gets reused. So long term, it's a much more positive way to go. Nothing goes into the landfill that goes in the recycling center. And I think that's absolutely imperative for Sullivan County to go back to a real sorting situation. And people want that. I mean, if you talk to people who are interested in recycling, which is most people. I mean, it's always going to be the ones who throw things out of their car. But, you know, unfortunately, they're there, and it's not many. But when you ask them, what would you like to have happen, they want all this stuff to be reused. And that's the best way to go, and it takes a huge volume off the top.
It sure does, Barbara. And in addition to that, there's waste reduction in the first place. Our society and corporations have turned us into a very convenience-oriented society with, you know, single-serve everything. And we need to shift away from that. So with luck, New York State Legislature will pass the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act next spring and also modernize the 42-year-old Container Deposit Return Law, both of which will together significantly reduce our waste stream. And it's just ludicrous that you still only get a nickel for returning a bottle or can, the same as you did in 1980.
Back
right. And even when that law went into effect, I mean, a nickel was worth a lot more, but it made a huge difference in the amount of stuff, bottles, et cetera, that just got tossed because they had value.
Yes, and states with a higher deposit have a much higher recycling rate.
No, back to the plan. Yeah. Back to this draft local solid waste management plan. There, one of the feasibility studies is a review of the current method, which, as I mentioned in the introduction, is trucking that waste to Seneca Falls landfill upstate, further upstate. That contract with Seneca Meadows ends at the end of the year, and the county has the option to extend it by a year or possibly 5 years, but that hinges on the landfill getting a new permit from the state because that landfill is running out of space. The county's waste has doubled over the last 10, 15 years to what some reports say is 100,000 tons of garbage. And then the other option is privatization. What are your thoughts on continuing with the Seneca Falls trucking or privatization as an option to deal with the county's waste problem?
Well, privatization only adds a profit margin to what the costs already are. Privatization of anything, be it your medical insurance like the Medicare Advantage programs, you're taking the basic things that you get and then adding an additional burden of the profit margin for the company. Now, why would you want to do that? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Rebecca?
It's an interesting question and one I'm not familiar enough with, but I think Barbara makes an excellent point. And as for continued trucking to Seneca Meadows, it's a stopgap measure.
Yeah. The county is accepting public comments via email until Tuesday, October 15th on this draft plan. The comments will become part of the draft management plan. We should also note that the State Department of Environmental Conservation would have to accept the plan. That may require the county to change parts of it. There's already a back and forth, according to county officials, between the county and the state. The final version would need to be voted on by the county legislature. And all of this has to happen before lawmakers vote to undertake the feasibility studies. So there's a lot going on. So the most important thing folks can do is what?
Right now.
Comment.
Yes.
Comment.
So submit your comments to recycling@sullivanny.us. And it would be great if you could CC jessica@no-burn.org. She's with
and also DCF, because we'll collect them and make sure that they pay attention to them.
Great. And for those who prefer hard copy, you can send them to Mark Witkowski, SCDPW Deputy Commissioner, P.O. Box 5012, Monticello, New York, 12701.
And this information will be on DCS's post about the incinerator. We will. I think the comments from go here, go there are already there, but I'll check and make sure that we have that so that you know if you don't get all this written down now, you'll have easy access to it.
That's great, Barbara. And if I have one more moment, Tim, backing up a little, I just want to say that emissions aren't the only toxic things that come from incinerators. Fully half the cost of an incinerator goes into pollution controls. That equipment concentrates pollutants in filters, ash, and wastewater, all of which need to go to a special landfill that's certified to handle hazardous waste. And those transportation costs and the so-called tipping fee for hazardous waste are significantly higher than for ordinary municipal solid waste.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Yes. Think long term. Don't think about, it costs less to do single stream. It's cheaper. It's maybe cheaper in the short run, but not in the long run, because when you add in those what's called externalized costs, in other words, that the company or the county doesn't have to account for now, but people will account for ongoing. Their children could be sick, they could be sick. And whenever you have emissions, understand that there's always plumes of higher concentration. We have actually measured these plumes in terms of the outcome from compressor stations of methane, and they are distinct plumes, and they are not easily dissipated. You don't have instantaneous mixing of materials, and also that Sullivan County, in particular, depends on a clean environment for its tourist economy. And Sullivan County is near the bottom in health outcomes and economics in terms of counties in the state. And if you take away that wonderful clean air and water that attracts our tourist economy, Sullivan County will be in more trouble.
We have been talking to Rebecca Kreshkoff of Beyond Plastics, Sullivan County, and Barbara Arendelle, the Chair and Chief Science Officer of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, about Sullivan County's draft local solid waste management plan. The county is accepting public comments until Tuesday, October 15th, which will become part of that draft waste management plan. You can find the plan at the county website, sullivanny.us. There's more information about Beyond Plastics at beyondplastics.org. And there's more information about Damascus Citizens and their work at damascuscitizensforsustainability.org. Barbara, Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
And thank you.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, our election coverage continues with just, 28 days to go? We'll have more on local coverage of the State Senate District 51. Right after this. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Apple Pie Palooza returns to the Catskill Brewery October 12th, kicking off Radio Catskill's Fall Fund Drive with a lot of apple pie. Come by, eat pie, buy pie. If you have a killer apple pie or apple dessert recipe, make it, bake it, and enter it into our baking contest. Go to WJFFradio.org to register your dessert now. Or just stop by and get pie at Apple Pie Palooza, 3 to 6, Saturday, October 12th, at Catskill Brewery, Livingston Manor.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
We're continuing our election coverage here. You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. New York State Senate District 51 is a convoluted district covering all or part of 9 counties in central New York and the Hudson Valley. It overlaps with 9 New York State Assembly districts and 3 U.S. congressional districts, and it's about the same size as Connecticut. The district has been represented by Republican Peter Oberrocker since 2021. Michelle Frazier is the Democratic candidate challenging Oberrocker. We heard from her last week, and this morning we'll hear from Senator Oberrocker. Prior to his election to the state Senate, Oberrocker served as a member of the Otsego County Board of Representatives, where he chaired the Public Works Committee. And he also served as vice chair of the Administration Committee and was a member of Human Services Negotiations and Intergovernmental Affairs Committees. Previously, he served as Maryland Town Supervisor and as a Town Board member. We spoke to him last week.
Joining us now is Senator Peter Oberrocker, currently serving his second term representing New York's 51st Senate District. He's seeking re-election this November. Oberacker was first elected in 2020 amid the global pandemic, and he previously held roles on the Otsego County Board of Representatives, where he chaired the Public Works Committee, served as vice chair of the Administration Committee, and was involved in human services, negotiations, and intergovernmental affairs. Prior to that, he was the Maryland, New York town supervisor and also served on that town board. This election, he's facing a challenge from Michelle Frazier. Welcome, Senator Oberacker.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for making time for me today. Fantastic.
So we gave a bit of your bio there, but do you want to tell us a little bit more about your background?
Certainly. You gave a very concise and I think up-to-date background on who I am, but there's some other sides of me as well. One that I'm, of course, very proud of is I'm a father of two wonderful children, three grandchildren, with one on the way coming in November. I was fortunate and extremely blessed to be able to marry my childhood sweetheart. We'll be coming up, but actually, 38 years this Friday. So been blessed in many ways, family-wise, of course. I'm a former CEO of a company that I started in 2007. I actually retired out of that in December. So a food scientist, a chef by trade, hopefully soon to be winemaking. So, you know, kind of vast interests. And of course, as a New York State Senator, one that, I take very seriously as far as my commitment to the people of the fighting 51st, as I like to call it. So.
Well, and then, and also congrats on both your anniversary and the coming third grandchild.
Yes, awesome. Thank you.
So can you tell listeners a bit of why you wanted to run again? Why are you running again?
Definitely. I'll use the word unfinished business. I am extremely proud of some of the accomplishments, you know, that I was able to realize in the coming to the end of my, you know, my second term. And I just give a quick laundry list of what some of those are. And I think it'll start to show everybody why, number one, I run again. First, I had seven bills passed this last legislative session in the Senate, second highest in the Republican conference. And I think what that shows is that, number one, my ability to work across the aisle to my colleagues and have them get behind some of the pieces of legislation that I was proposing, common sense legislation. So I was very, very proud to be able to get, you know, seven bills passed for that. I'm a member of the Budget and Finance Committee. And I think it, again, kind of shows that there is a willingness to trust maybe my business background. As a former town supervisor, I've had budgetary experience and running, you know, a municipality. So I think the fact that they approved me to be on the Budget and Finance Committee is one of showing, again, confidence in my abilities. I'm the ranking member on the Alcoholism and Substance Use Disorder, and I think we'll get into further discussions about that and how that comes into play, especially, you know, in Sullivan County. I'm the ranker on transportation. Again, you know, we have some interesting transportation, I think, issues coming up, not only in Sullivan County, but in overall my 51st Senate district. I'm a member of the Ag Committee. I'm a member of the Education Committee and Higher Ed. And I'm also on the Labor Committee. So you start to look at, I think, the vastness of my committee assignments and what that gives me. I'm dealing with a lot of interesting issues, some again that I want to see, you know, come forward. And to be able to do that, I need to be reelected, and hence I'm running.
You need to share with us if anything that you may have learned since your first time in office. And by that could be from when you first served at the town level or in your past 4 years in the New York Senate. What have you learned that maybe you didn't have before you took office?
Patience, I guess, is the word that comes to mind. you know, from a business mindset, we work in a totally different mindset. Okay, determining what the issue is, putting the plan in place, instituting a plan, at some point debriefing about whether we have met expectations to that plan, and then make adjustments accordingly so that we do meet expectations. Municipal wise, and more so as I've gotten a little bit higher up, you know, in the process, there's not this speed of business. There's not this speed of decision making. And that can get frustrating, very frustrating to somebody who, again, is used to a certain level of speed and commitment. So what I've had to learn is to be patient. I've had to learn that, you know, the Albany works at a much slower pace. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm simply saying that that's what I had to get used to. So patience to me has been the one part of my personality, which I've had to really work with. And I think I have. And hence the reason that I really feel like I've made those inroads into the process in Albany. So again, I try to hold it. I try to hold it together as best I can, but there are times where I'm really trying to push to get things, get things moving.
Okay, let's get right into the issues now, but let's just start with your overview of what you would say are the most pressing issues facing the 51st Senate District today.
You know, I think first and foremost, again, going back to my status as a ranker on the alcoholism and substance use disorder, I don't think there's any of us that hasn't been touched in some way, shape, or form with substance use disorder. I know I have a family member who suffers from it. And I've seen from that point, the downstream effects, right, of how many lives it touches and in what areas. In other words, I mean, we're talking about it's stress on the health field, right? The healthcare field. There's the stresses on our public safety. You know, there's the stresses on local municipalities. There's stresses through our counties. So every step of the way, I've seen where this has really reached out and touched so many different hot buttons within the 51st Senate District. So first and foremost, for me, and it, again, maybe having a little bit more personal experience with a family member, it is substance use disorder as far as number one. Number two, there is the housing issues. And we know that that's, posing questions and concerns and where that kind of fits in too with substance use disorder. I mean, we find, unfortunately, a lot of our populace are homeless. And, how do we address more viable, safe, and convenient housing for individuals within the 51st Senate District? And how do we put the plan in place? How do we systematically, in a common sense form, put together, which I think we can do, our issues when it comes to making more housing available and affordable? So there's that. The other part of where I am is when I was a former ranker on internet and technologies. I don't have broadband at my home. And today we're being asked to do so much more online from health issues, signing up for an appointment, signing up anything county-wise, looking at permits that you can draw for. If you don't have access to the internet today, it is akin, in my opinion, to being without electric. In all honesty, so those are some key areas right now that I'm looking at focusing in on. I mean, there are many more. I mean, there's agriculture, there's veterans. I'm a big supporter of EMS. Here's another one: EMS and firefighting. We were able to pass EMS as an essential service this last year in the Senate, and it didn't pass in the Assembly. So I'm looking forward to being able to focus in on some of those areas. I think that would have a great and positive effect to the folks I represent in the 51st.
And we're going to give you a chance to focus a little more on some of those areas because we've got further questions on those issues. Let's start with housing, which you mentioned, which I think everybody's really acknowledges a major concern, especially the last few years. Housing affordability is a major concern. So, you know, how would you address the housing crisis in your district?
Well, like with building a house, you have to have a good foundation. And the foundation for the overall umbrella of the housing issue is water, is sewer, and is energy. I mean, those are key components to putting any housing plan into a viable plan for making it successful. And I mean, we all know there's issues with water down in Sullivan County, having enough of it, right? Having updated lines, you know, sewer. You can't have anything that if you don't have the capacity to process, you know, sewage coming out. And then, of course, energy-wise, both electric and otherwise. So my plan would be to focus in on those areas and shoring up those very important grid areas, if you will, right? And then from that point, I think it starts to lead us down the path for viable housing and affordable housing as well. Other areas, of course, you know, there's some zoning and you know, codes and things of that nature. But really, without that foundation, I think we're just really spinning our wheels when it comes to the overall question of housing and making it successful.
The next issue we want to ask about is the environment. I often, when we talk about this with candidates, one of the things I point out for our listening area is, you know, the two major industries in our area are tourism and agriculture, yep, which in different ways really rely on the environment. And then there's people just have environmental concerns. So what are your policies to protect and improve environmental quality and protection in the 51st district?
And again, you've hit on it, you know, so eloquently. So let's start like with the agriculture side of things. I don't think we can ask for better stewards of our environment than our local, and I'll use the word agricultural warriors, you know, that are out there, our farmers, those that are growing, believe it or not. I mean, I'm also kind of within there. I'm growing grapes, and my son and daughter-in-law are dairy farmers, actually, in one of the neighboring counties that I don't represent. So number one, I'm plugged in and I understand the challenges sometimes that we in Albany also put on our agricultural folks, and how, I won't say difficult, but I'll use the word challenging it becomes for them to adhere to some of the policies that we put forth. It almost is almost like we haven't immersed ourselves to fully understand what those challenges are. I would rather see us educate ourselves on what those true challenges are. And a lot of that is simply just making it viable and affordable and profitable for our agricultural farmers out there to stay within there. Because then what happens? If they go out, then we have land that is left over. It's out of production. You know, COVID taught us, if nothing else, we need to be self-sufficient when it comes to our food production. So very, very concerned with not only maintaining, but making it viable again to get back into farming. And then, you know, from the tourism side, I can't think of a more beautiful, beautiful spot than the Catskills. And especially at this time of the year, right? The colors. I don't know if we promote it enough. I really don't. I know we have a lot of our, you know, we have a lot of areas that talk about it. But one of the things that I've been kind of working on is trying to work on a green energy empowered rail from Port Jervis up the western parts of Sullivan County to try to bring folks from downstate here, okay, into the jewel of the Catskills. I think the more people that we could get, this is a green hydrogen conceptualize now, green hydrogen-fired rail system to bring folks from the city up into the Catskills. And I think what it'll do, of course, it would boost tourism, which, again, directly affects, economic development and all the services, the cottage industries that could be, spurned from that. So when it comes to tourism, we've got a lot of things going for us. Don't get us wrong. But one of the ones that I've focused in on is a green energy powered locomotive passenger rail service from Port Jervis. Actually, all the way up to Binghamton, New York is conceptualized where it is right now. And it is starting, believe it or not, to gain some traction. So hopefully more updates to follow on that. But I think that could be a huge boost to both the bringing in those that respect and want to share in the beauty of our agriculture and what we have, and also tourism.
And do you picture that being like an extension, whether it's a literal partner with MTA, New Jersey Transit, or just a de facto extension of the Port Jervis line?
100% agree. Yes. I mean, part of the, it's a green hydrogen propelled, I guess would be the way to describe it. And so what we're looking at is it on two fronts. It's also taking current diesel fired locomotives and retrofitting them to be able to use green hydrogen. So we're reducing carbon footprint, which is a big issue. It's also promoting, I think, some of the green energy initiatives out there. It's maybe a 200 foot moving billboard, if you will, for that. And I think the concept is sound. I think it would fit right in with those of us that want to protect the environment, protect the green spaces that we have, and in turn, bring the folks out, bring them out into the wonderful Catskills. So it hits, I think, some of the hot buttons that we're all concerned about and looking to address.
Okay, let's move on to public safety. And we've got a couple of questions along these lines. We'll just start in general. What's your stance on public safety in the justice system and how to improve public safety in this district?
Well, number one, I support our men and women in blue. They have the most difficult job I think we can all appreciate and agree to. And the other thing that I think sometimes we forget, sometimes in the public sector, we forget that most times, these folks are seeing people on their worst day. And so, to support them, whenever I see somebody, I've always acknowledged, thank you. Thank you for your service. I think that goes a long way. But we've also done some things in Albany that I think is, and again, made it more challenging, right? Three things that I can think of right away, raise the age, cashless bail. And those have taken away, I think, some of the ability for our men and women in law enforcement to adequately address public safety as the overall umbrella that we're talking about. It's made their jobs, I think, a little bit more difficult, and I would even say a little bit more frustrating. So for me, I would absolutely look at repealing the cashless bail. Now, everyone's going to say, get in an uproar, but as I alluded to in my intro, we in business would look at something, no matter where it was, did it meet expectation? If it didn't, there's no shame in saying it didn't. Let's take the data that we've received, let's reevaluate it, let's retool it, and then let's re-implement it. Those are the things I'm looking at. Repeal, review, and retool are the three R's that I would apply to that under public safety. I think all of us feel like that with the events that we've seen lately, both nationally and locally, that a greater focus for allowing our men and women in law enforcement to do their job, everyone benefits. Everyone benefits from that. So that would be my answer and my plan, if you will, under the public safety question.
And a little bit more on the bail reform there. So going off of what you're saying, if I'm following this right, you like what's on the books now to be repealed. Do you have any ideas for what the second R was, retool? Do you have any
review?
It's review. Yes. Do you want to do a review before you retool, and that so you can get some?
Well, I think you know, for me it would be repeal, so that we're all starting back then at say a ground zero, okay, or at the bottom. Then when I say by review, what I would look at, and I would love to get the input from our law enforcement, our judicial people that are, you know, dealing with this day to day, take what they have seen since we implemented the current version of cashless bail, and then review it, retool it, and then reinstitute it. I think it would really bring in the stakeholders. I really think it would bring in the stakeholders, and I think we would have an overall better law. We would have a better program. And it would address the concerns that were originally brought up as to why, cashless bail was promoted and talked about. So there's no shame in it. You know, I think sometimes we in Albany are almost afraid to admit that we're human in certain areas and do, sometimes not necessarily there were unintended consequences. So I would really love to see us do that. And I would be all in favor of working with my colleagues from across the aisle to do that. Let's look at repealing it. We start back at a ground zero. Let's review it, get our stakeholders' input, and then we can retool it and re-implement it. A lot of R's there, but they all kind of connect one another.
Right. Okay, and then the last issue we want to touch on, then we'll have a wrap-up question, is economic growth. What steps would you take to promote economic growth and job creation in the rural areas of your district?
Number one, you know, I would look at trying to let business be a business. So I've said this before, and some people kind of look at it like, what are you talking about? We put a lot of unfunded mandates. We put a lot of stresses and strains on our businesses. And businesses are very adept at making those changes and dealing with it. But there also comes a point where they feel like they're being not necessarily singled out, but just that, again, there's that disconnect. You don't really understand what this means to me personally. And so for me, the first thing I do when I meet a business person, not only within the district, but in all of New York, I say thank you. I say thank you for staying here, because they do have a choice. And if we're not creating kind of that environment of not just being singled out, in other words, we are here to help you. We are here to create this foundation again so that you can be successful. If you're successful, ultimately we in Albany are successful. And all the other issues that we can talk about, job creation, workforce development, housing, just getting folks, all of those things will start to weed themselves out. And that, but if we don't have a good, strong economic base, we will not have the answer to the rest of those questions. So mandated, I'd love to see us release some of those mandates, make it more of what I would say a business favorable environment. And we can do that. We can do that. It's really not that difficult.
Okay. And finally, before we go, I'd just like you to talk to us and let the listeners know about why you think they should vote for you over your opponent.
If I was to sum it up, I would say the term that I would use is respectful experience. And what I mean by that, I feel as though I have been able to earn the respect of my colleagues from across the aisle in my ability to sometimes, I'll use the word, disagree agreeably. And I think we've kind of lost that, you know, in some of the some of our interactions in politics in general. So I feel as though I've earned it, being on the budget committee, having my input listened to and taken, you know, into account. I'll equate to our EMS getting it passed. I was carrying legislation for EMS as an essential service. I was not going to be able to bring it across the finish line. I reached out to a colleague from across the aisle, and it was Chairwoman Mayer. She was heading up. She chairs our education. And she was able to bring it across. And so sometimes you have to work in those areas for the betterment of everybody. And I feel like I bring that. I feel like I've been able to again, project that. Seven bills passed, second most in the conference. I do support the, of course, public safety. And also, one of my campaign promises when I ran first was to have a point of presence in Sullivan. So we do have, our Liberty office. I have a staffer, of course, that is there. So I think I've committed myself to not only supporting, but representing not only my 51st Senate district, but Sullivan County in a manner in which they would expect a state legislator to represent them.
Well, Senator Peter Obracker, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you as well. And get out there and enjoy the fall foliage.
And that was Jason Dole speaking to State Senator Peter Obracker, who represents New York's State Senate District 51. It's a part of our election 2024 coverage, and you can hear our candidate interviews on our website, wjffradio.org. Our election coverage continues with New York's 19th Congressional District debate this Thursday. Republican U.S. Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival Josh Riley face off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live Thursday at 7 p.m. here on Radio Catskill or stream it on wjffradio.org. The New York 19th Congressional District debate is produced as part of a regional media consortium, including WAMC and WNYT News Channel 13 in Albany. And then on October 22nd, we'll be bringing you the debate between Democratic U.S. Representative Matt Cartwright and his Republican challenger, Rob Bresnahan. That debate will take place at Wilkes-Barre's King's College Burke Auditorium on October 22nd. The simulcast is being provided by WVIA-TV and WVIA Radio. And another note that our fall fun drive is coming up, officially kicking off this weekend with Apple Pie Palooza at the Catskill Brewery. But you can donate now and support us so we can continue to bring you all of this coverage and all of the news and culture and NPR that you hear here. Keep it alive and well by donating at WJFFradio.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This week's Retro Cocktail Hour has Jungle Queens, Beatnik Bongos, and music for The Original Swinger. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
The demonization of fact-based journalism is one of democracy's biggest threats, as the number of local newsrooms has dwindled, leaving disinformation to fill the void. This station is an oasis amid all the noise and fiction by building bridges and holding people to account. We do it thanks to you. You give us the tools we need to fight attacks on truth by donating to this station. Here's how.
Give what you can at WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org. Donate, support us during our fall fun drive to help us continue to bring you fact-based news and information. Today's weather, cooler with some clouds, sunny, a little breezy this afternoon, a high 63. Clear tonight, low 42. And looking ahead, tomorrow, sunny, 60, a little cooler Wednesday and Thursday, high only 56 Wednesday, the high on Thursday, 53.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cook breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. On air, live streaming at WJFFradio.org. Ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill. Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.